and thank you for joining us in our next episode in the series of How Talent Acquisition Works. Today, I'm delighted to be joined by Anthony Haynes, Communications Director at FJ Wilson Talent Services. Hi, Anthony. Welcome.
Hello, Shara. Thank you very much.
This is a fun one because I actually really get to interview you and all about your role. So as Communications Director, diving right in, what is the purpose of your role?
Well, you know, we're very keen when we're dealing with roles that we're trying to fill for clients. So trying to get people to articulate the purpose of a role. We try and get people to write that. And of course, you know, do as you say, not as I do. I don't think we've ever written down what the purpose of my role is, right? But I see it as something like this. I work with people both within the company and externally, people who know a lot about certain things and are specialists who know how to do certain things. And they might at the same time be really good at communicating those things, but they won't necessarily be. You can be good at something without necessarily being good at communicating what it is you're doing, or maybe you're just not really interested in how to communicate it. So I see the purpose of my role is to actually, I suppose it's facilitating more than anything else, in terms of sort of helping people to articulate the things that they want to, the things that they do and the things they want to get across. And we hope by that we kind of remove the imperfections in communication. We stop communication being an issue, take it out of the game, and just hope that things therefore move more smoothly as a result.
I know you certainly helped me with that. Digging a little bit deeper into sort of the removing the imperfection. So if I was to ask the question in another way, in terms of what is it designed to enable or achieve, is that what it is? Yeah.
Yes, I think this might sound a bit of a negative way of describing it, but I think largely it's to remove or reduce the risk of things going wrong because of a lack of communication or miscommunication.
Perfect. Makes sense. And more understand why that's so crucial. And unpacking that a bit more, what actions does this entail? What do you actually do?
Well, I would say one of them is diagnosis, which is I don't feel that I have to intervene in everything. I read quite a lot on social media about what other comms people do, and I think frankly in the profession, which I don't really want to call it a profession actually, but other people want to call it a profession, there's often a lot of kind of quite kind of busy work and trying to kind of talk up your role by intervening in all aspects of communication, and I don't see that. I see my role more along the lines of thinking, well, where are the pitfalls? You know, there are certain things in communication where people don't do them so well or things go wrong, and then you notice that problem recurring. So in a number of situations or a number of contexts, the same pitfall turns up. So I think partly my role is sort of diagnosing, well, where is it that actually we have problems? And then secondly, I try to anticipate them. So what I try to do is to think, well, what can we provide people with, or what can we say to people that means they don't fall into the pitfall? So one of the things I will do is, for instance, if I'm writing loose scripts for webinars or podcasts, is try to frame the script and the questions in a way that makes it less likely that communicative pitfalls arise. And similarly, I mean, we create resources as well as the audio stuff, we create written text resources as well. And those resources, you know, for employers on how to recruit people and how to onboard them and so on, and also for candidates in terms of how to apply for jobs, how to negotiate interviews and so on. What we don't do is sort of randomly cover lots of points and try and end up with huge lists of tips. I don't like very long lists of tips because people can never remember them, and actually they get a bit swamped by them. What we try and do is think, well, which of the tips that we could give specifically designed to try and avoid a kind of typical pitfall? So that's, I think, diagnosis and then anticipation. And then I think the third one would be gross, naturally, in a way, it's kind of implicit in the second one, is content creation. So I help create a number of different kinds of content. So webinar, podcasts, written resources, both in print and online, protocols of how to do things, a little bit of online writing as well on the web page and so on. And as well as that sort of, I suppose that's partly a sort of resourcing thing, partly PR, social media, I suppose. I also quite often get involved in drafting documentation because documentation is maybe not a very sexy subject. It's actually really important in recruitment to get the documentation right. So thinking about things like actually helping employers a bit with how they write job descriptions and then thinking about how we write job adverts. And we don't, with job adverts, we don't simply cut and paste from employers' job descriptions because they're different kinds of things. The purpose of those two texts is different. We also, in terms of documents, I help write pitches when we're writing, you know, a pitch for certain kind of client or certain new kind of business to try and articulate what it is we actually do and what our strengths are. And in all of that, cutting across all of it, is trying to actually discern and create a voice for the brand. And I suppose intellectually, that's the thing I find really interesting and really, really satisfying. That I think, well, I'm hoping people, if they read or listen to a number of things we do, would recognise there's some sort of FJ Wilson voice there.
Definitely. Thank you for those, Anthony. Clearly paints the picture clearer. And in terms of sort of stakeholders, what can stakeholders, so be it clients or candidates, do best to support the process? What sort of examples of best practice have you noticed?
Well, I think responsiveness, because very often in communications, things end up being, in some sense, collaborative. You end up co-creating things. So you might write a document and say, let's take a job advertisement. You might say, okay, we've read the JD. Here's our job advertisement. Before we run it, we'd really like you just to have a look at it and see, you know, are you happy with it? In fact, I don't ask them that question. I ask them, like, can you see any problems with what I've done? And then you don't want to have to wait several days to get a response. And this is difficult because each of the people we're working with, whether they're in HR or hiring managers, they've got other things to do. And probably they've got a bulging inbox of emails. But if they can be responsive, that's probably the thing that helps most. I suppose the other thing I'd say is being open to reiteration. So there's a phrase in writing pedagogy which is kill your darlings. So sometimes when you write a document, the thing that you're secretly really pleased with, the phrasing or whatever that you really like, someone else says, actually, I don't think that works very much. I think we should replace it. And it's important to have people who are open to that idea rather than simply saying, no, we want to keep it the way we already.
There is something special about fresh eyes, isn't there?
Yes. Yes, exactly. That's exactly it. Yeah. Yeah. And often the fresh eyes are seeing it from the point of view of the reader rather than the producer.
Okay. And now just switching gears slightly and thinking about skill set. What skills do you find the most useful in your work?
I think one of them is because I've worked with a written word for a long time, I have sort of thought quite a lot about what the workflow is and what processes I work through. And what I will tend to do is produce early drafts of things which are not designed to be particularly good, but to designed to work as a prototype, which you can then work on. So I will tend to write things fairly quickly and then sometimes with input from other people, sometimes not, then think, well, actually the real work now is in the editing. It's in the editing that you actually start to try and turn it into a professional piece of work. So I think I've learned how to distinguish drafting from editing, and I've also learned, well, what do you do when you edit? What kind of operations do you need there? So I'd say that's one thing, knowing the work processes. I mean, other people will have other ways of working, but I think it's important to kind of know what your approach is, and I've learned a lot from working with other kinds of creatives, particularly designers. Designers very often have, you know, they can't just wait for inspiration. They have deadlines to meet and user requirements to meet and so on. And they have to know that they can knock something out reliably on the schedule. So that's been useful, listening to designers and thinking, well, what can I learn from them? I think the other thing is phrasing and trying to work out the tone of the document and thinking, well, you know, when you're writing, you sometimes think that's the right phrase. That's the one they want. Yeah. I learned a lot. Funnily enough, my father, who died when I was fairly young, I hardly ever talked to him about his work. But he was a senior civil servant, and I did have a few conversations with him about his work because he was in the business of having to brief, you know, he was in the Ministry of Defence, he had to brief people in the armed forces, he had to brief other civil servants, he had sometimes to brief ministers. And so he was very good at explaining to me, like, if you put something in one way, they're not going to like that. But if you phrase it in a different way, a bit like Sir Humphrey on Yes Minister, if people have watched that sitcom, if you phrase it in another way, they're going to respond more constructively. And although he died before I could actually ask him for, you know, details about that, just that general mentality of trying to think, if you phrase something one way, trying to predict what the mental behaviour of a reader would be, that's a really useful skill.
So many excellent skills there, Anthony, and probably not to do a cheeky plug for the episode on writing job descriptions, but I think that's so true, you know, in terms of those examples and the tips that you have in that episode, it ensures that you attract the right talent, because it's all in the way that you're presenting the role, all in the way, you know, you're describing the organization, so that the potential candidate can actually see where they'd want to work. And I also particularly love your example of just being able to get the draft done first, and whether it's a straw man, because I find often in wanting to perfect the final piece, there's a lot of procrastination. And, you know, okay, I need to do this. You don't actually just get a draft done, the first draft, and then perfect and edit it. So I think that's something, well, I will also be taking away.
Yes. Well, I learned a lot. I worked for a magazine where I wrote soapbox articles. But to be frank, I wasn't the sort of usually the number one person to be asked, which incidentally, I entirely relaxed about. I was quite happy about it. But their press day was a Tuesday, and fairly often, actually, on a Monday, the editor would contact me and say, the person who's supposed to be writing a soapbox article has let me down. Could you knock one out for us? You know, so I've got it for tomorrow. And so I had to work out a way of doing that. We couldn't just have a blank space in the magazine saying, Anthony's still working on it. TBC. It'd be really good by next week. And a curious thing was, I found that actually having to work in that way actually improved my writing, which was a bit counterintuitive, I found.
Because it's almost like getting out of your own way and just getting the job done.
Yeah. And it's all about making decisions. We know there are certain jobs that involve making decisions, like driving a Formula One racing car or something. And people don't really think about writing as, well, it's not that kind of thing, is it? But actually, there are a large number of decisions. So what I'm interested in as a writer is, first of all, what decisions can we just take out of the process so we just don't have to waste time thinking about them? And secondly, I'm very motivated by an anecdote from, I think it was Harry S. Truman when he was a president, where he said, if you know what you are going to decide, you might as well get on and decide it. Bingo. And I find time and time again with procrastination, people tell you they're agonizing about a decision and you think, yeah, but I know what you're going to decide in the end anyway, so just get on with it.
And if you need to edit or tweak it, you could do so once it's done.
Yes, indeed. Just do it. Yeah. Indeed.
Right, well, that's certainly my takeaway. Thank you very much, Anthony. It's been really fascinating, interesting, and also educational to hear about your role, skills, and what you do.
I've really enjoyed having to think about it, so thank you very much.
This podcast is produced by Dr. Bart Hallmark. The music's by Harry Chalmers, and the podcast is published by FJ Wilson Talent Services. If you'd like to contact us about the services we offer recruitment services, we offer talent development services to help you develop the talent you already have on your staff, and we also offer coaching to help develop individuals. If you'd like to contact us about our services, you're of course very welcome to. And the best way to do that is via our website, which has a very easy URL. It's simply all lowercase, fjwilson.com. That's all one word, fjwilson, fjwilson.com. Hope to hear from you. Thank you for listening.